So I'm super curious because I was checking out your background and it seemed to me like there was a hard pivot at some point because like you worked or you even founded a law firm, something war room before, and now you're doing Salesforce development. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's been a long, winding path. Yeah, I started my career as a lawyer, actually. I was a trial lawyer. So I did that for about 8 years. And I really liked practicing law. I liked, working with clients and things like that. But I was always kind of more drawn to the tech side of things. And so even from back in college, I was, teaching myself to code and build small websites and things like that. So that's really where my interest was, but at the time it seemed like that wasn't as much of a career. I didn't know anyone else that was like a programmer or anything like that. So the safe path was law school. So yeah, became a lawyer and then on this, just started to build some software for lawyers in problem areas that I saw. You mentioned War Room. So that was a deposition transcript tool where you could like highlight and annotate deposition transcripts. And we sold that for a while as a SaaS product. But what really came out of that was Launchpad. And so in this sort of 37 Signals Basecamp mentality, we were very much bootstrappers. And so to pay the bills for the SaaS product, we started a consultancy called Launchpad Lab. And we started working with some really great clients in Chicago back in 2011, 2012. Three of us started the company.
Nice. Yeah. So if I understand that correctly, the playbook or what you had in mind is really like have the agency for the cash flow, right? And then use that to fund experiments, run, still build software, right? Build SaaS tools.
Yeah, we were always building at that time with just there were three of us. We were just wanted to build things. So whether it was a side project or some startup idea we had or an idea for a client, we just love building things. And so yeah, whatever ideas that came to us or that we created, we would just build them.
That's super fascinating because actually my partner, my business partner and I, that's precisely how we started our agency too. Like we are running an email cold email agency and like didn't really want to do it, right? We were building software too and then figured, okay, let's try to get some cash flow and then reinvest it into like software experiments. So not very successfully so far on the software side. The agency side is going too well. And I'm very curious how this played out for you.
Yeah, I don't know if I would recommend that path for everyone. It worked out for us on the agency side for sure. The agency was a lot more successful than the legal software or any other software that we created. So we quickly sort of focused more on the agency. We ended up spinning off and selling the legal software and just focused on the agency. And so, yeah, I think at some point there's certainly like a lot of benefits to having a SaaS product. As you know, agency, they're just two very different models. And I think at some point you have to make that kind of hard decision, or maybe the market kind of makes this decision for you to pick a path because it's really hard to run both of them at the same time. The agency model requires like certain skills and focus that where your focus would be different on the SaaS side. And so I wouldn't recommend running those two simultaneously for very long, basically.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's precisely, I think, the lesson I learned so far about this approach. And I mean, it is good that the agency side is working so well, but still, like, damn it. SaaS is very, very sexy, right? I would love to pull it off at some point, but it's just so damn hard. And
Right,
it's a
right.
very different game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those margins and thinking you're going to work on a beach or something like that, or that's definitely enticing. So I get it.
Yeah, I mean, working on a beach is definitely possible with an agency because my business partner Ryan, he's from the US, but he lives in Bali right now. So that's what he's doing. I'm in cold Denmark. So, but also like we are fully remote. And I think your team is also remote, right? You have some people in South America when I had a look.
Yeah, so from the time we started the agency back in like 2012 through when COVID hit in 2020, we were all in Chicago. We were very much in the office every day, or most days, I should say. We were pretty flexible with working from home and whatnot, but everyone was in Chicago, everyone was local. And then when COVID hit, We kind of made this, people wanted to go to certain places during COVID or beyond. And so we just made the decision to go fully remote. So we currently have about a third of the team in Chicago and the rest of the team is remote, including, I think we're in like 14 or 15 different states in the US. And then we have a couple people in Latin America too. So we've looked to grow the team in primarily Argentina and Brazil, but across Latin America as well.
Is that because of time zones or any other reason?
Yeah, when we work on projects, we really like to have like close collaboration and communication. I know that other companies, maybe your partner that's in Bali, can pull it off and do, you know, more async work. But for us, it's really important to get everyone in the room, so to speak, or a Zoom or a whiteboard, and, you know, be able to be on calls in a reasonable time zone with clients. So we're talking to clients very regularly. We're talking to our teams all the time. So the time zone overlap is important to us. So that's why we chose, one of the reasons we chose Latin America.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And like, it is a big challenge with Ryan in a different time zone. And we made sure that the team is on the same time zone for the exact same reason. Like, remote works, async, I'm not really convinced, right? I don't know who pulls that off and how, but I just think, yeah, you need to be online during the same hours. Otherwise, there's always like a huge delay when someone gets stuck and then it takes 12 hours before the next person comes online to unblock them. It's just so slow, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think our team is in general, I can't speak to other teams. Certainly it works for some companies to be purely async, but our team is like pretty social and extroverted for the most part. And so they want to be kind of like talking to each other. They want more of that kind of collaboration versus, you know, writing a document and then, or writing a ticket in Asana or Basecamp or something, and then someone reading it 12 hours later.
Yeah. And like, I can't imagine how you build any form of culture or like team spirit with a setup like that.
Hey, I give props to the companies that do it. We've just found it to be hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. So what I would be very curious about, because that's a big challenge and a question mark for us right now, is how you go about hiring people in South America, for example. Like, anything you learned there, or do you just go to LinkedIn and message random people?
I think with hiring, you know, I mean, it's a little bit different hiring outside of the US, but I think in general, like, you kind of have to have thick skin and know that you're going to make a couple mistakes and, you know, not to let that deter you. When you find a person that works really well, when you find the right fit, you try to replicate that as much as possible. And so for us, it was finding a couple great hires that we really loved in Latin America and then figuring out, you know, how do we contact them? Let's repeat that. Do they have any friends maybe that they can refer to us, which happens a lot now? That so you need, you know, a couple people that you trust really well in those countries, and then they can help you build out the network there. I think that's the way to do it. You know, I think you mentioned Upwork or something like that. Like, that can be a great start for your first one or two people to find someone that's a fit. You know, start, if you can work with someone on a freelance basis, that's always a great like way to try it out and see if it's a mutual fit and then grow it from there.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we've tried a lot, like different job boards and stuff like that. So how did you see like that network in Latin America? Like, what, I mean, it makes perfect sense if you manage to find some people. Obviously getting referrals, like on the client side, is amazing, but obviously you need that first initial spark.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I can't speak to like other areas of the world. I just know that interviewing and working with a lot of people in Latin America, it's very seamless. Like, the time zones work. When you're on a Zoom with someone, you know, you would assume that you could be talking to someone in the US. It's really a seamless kind of work relationship. And so I don't feel like that barrier's there. But yeah, I don't know if are you struggling with a particular area or?
No. I mean, there are different parts that I think are challenging. I mean, the first part is obviously getting quality candidates. And obviously this has become like, there's a lot of noise, right? When you're just putting up a job post on some remote job board or something like this. I mean, you get 1,000 applicants, but 99% didn't even read the job post, right? With also like all the GPT stuff going on, like it is harder to filter out. And then also first impressions can be very misleading, I believe. And you really, someone shows their true colors when you really work with them. I've learned, right? You really need to work with them for a week or so, but obviously that doesn't scale and it's just a very slow process. So did you learn anything about that, or is it still the good old trial and error for you?
I think the trial and error, I guess one other tip, you know, if you can find a recruiter that you trust in those countries or that has worked with those countries that you're interested in expanding to, that can be really helpful. Typically, I think for an agency, depending on size, I found the best fit to be like small, mostly independent recruiters versus like huge firms. And so I know that's hard to find, but maybe, you know, connecting with an agency owner that has a team in that country that's not competitive with you, and maybe figuring out how they did it. And if they have a recruiter that they use, that can be really helpful, because like you mentioned, the job posts and things like that, they don't always translate well. I was never able to really navigate the big Latin America job boards, like they're equivalent to Indeed or whatever. So that was always a challenge for me. So the recruiter can cut through that and just have their own network. I guess the other thing is like LinkedIn is still, you know, fairly well used and universal. So LinkedIn, you know, recruiter-like can get you pretty far as well. And you may be able to get out the word that way.
Yeah, that's definitely also something we've tried and saw good results. Oh, definitely LinkedIn is great. And you've worked with recruiters, right? And that's also your experience, where you found success?
Yeah, we don't do it a ton, especially in the US. We kind of rely on our own network and LinkedIn and things like that. But for certain roles that where we think a recruiter can add a lot of value, we'll do it. Obviously, it can be very expensive, an expensive way to grow. So you don't want to do it for every opening. But you know, when it makes sense, or for a good example is like when we're hiring for a role that's not sort of core to our like development or design or product teams, where we don't really know how to hire, you know, that certain person. Maybe it's someone specialized on the marketing side or sales or something that, you know, we don't have huge teams around, then recruiters can be very helpful there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And since we talked about like culture and stuff, and you said two-thirds is remote, right? How do you handle this in terms of tools and communication? Do you use Slack? What kind of meetings do you do to make sure there is some kind of team spirit, or yeah, people feel part of a team?
Yeah, we use all the tools you'd expect. I think that most companies are using at this stage are probably pretty similar. We use Slack a lot, probably too much, but we use it a lot. It's good for like task management. We use Asana. We have a very agile approach to software development. And so we're, you know, meeting regularly, maybe more often even than a typical like agile workflow would be. But we're doing, you know, meeting with the client typically once a week, for sure every other week at the most. And then, so meeting with the clients regularly. So the teams are staying in close contact. And then we for the culture, you know, piece of it beyond that, we really try to celebrate like what we call wins. And so we have like a wins channel in Slack. And anytime that the project team or a person does something that's really great, we recognize it there. And then we announce those during our weekly all company stand on Mondays.
Nice. So you have like the one big company call per week on Mondays. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. We talk through like, you know, what the successes have been, any challenges that we want to raise. We also do voting for what we call kudos. So that's kind of like a employee of the week, if you will, or employees of the week. And so everyone votes on that and says, you know, they can nominate people that have done great things over the course of the week. And then at the end of the year, we make charitable donations on behalf of everyone that's won.
Nice.
Yeah. You get like dollars for every week. Yeah.
So you don't do daily huddles.
We try to stay away from the daily. I think for most teams, they stay away from like the daily synchronous huddles. Some teams do like a check-in on Slack and things like that. But yeah, unless a project is like, you know, if it's getting ready to go live or there's some real emergency, then I think most teams have found they have enough work kind of groomed and unblocked and ready to go that they don't necessarily need the daily huddle.
Yeah, we've tried that for a while and didn't really like it. It was very transactional and there's not much you can cover and it didn't really add value. Now we also do like once a week, really focused on the good stuff, the bad stuff, and not just transactional. That's definitely a good approach, I believe. And do you use any CRM?
Yes, we use Salesforce. So
you're completely basic with your stack.
Really basic Salesforce. Yeah. So I didn't really mention it this at the beginning, but you know, we obviously do custom software development typically for mid-size and up companies. And so we're building usually complicated mobile and web applications that, and in most of those cases, they integrate in some way with Salesforce. So we've been Salesforce partners for over 10 years, and we were tending to build more and more custom applications that sync with Salesforce data. And so because of that, we're big fans of Salesforce. We have a Salesforce team in-house, and so we're very comfortable with it. So we have, you know, used the Salesforce, both Sales Cloud and Marketing Cloud internally.
Yeah, that makes obviously a ton of sense if you're Salesforce developers and then would be crazy not to use it. But one thing I noticed on your site is that you offer a ton of different stuff, right? You're not really focused on one offer. And I'm curious, like, how this evolved. Did you ever try like really niching down, just focusing on the Salesforce stuff, for example? And yeah, anything you learned about that?
Yeah, that's always a discussion. I think in the agency world, there's a lot of people that would say, you know, you need to pick your, what do they say? The riches are in the niches or something like that. So they would, you know, advise us to niche down. I mean, we try to do a bit of that. We've spent a bit more time focusing on that, you know, idea of custom development within Salesforce. I think in terms of industries, we enjoy working across a lot of different types of businesses. I think it gives us an advantage to see, you know, what the latest is in financial services, and can we apply that to healthcare? Or is there something interesting in education that we can apply to how people think about or interact with like mortgage brokers? So we can use like learnings from different spaces to apply to different clients. And that's been really valuable to us. So I don't think we're in a hurry to specialize in terms of like industry vertical, but in terms of technology, we're definitely narrowing in on it, I would say. Yeah.
That is interesting. And we have like tons of discussions about this too. Like, because yeah, like there are pros and cons on both sides, but I see the same thing with specializing on industry. It actually is a big benefit if you work on in different industries, because you just get different ideas, right? And then you can really apply what you learned here in a completely different industry. And that's a big, big unlock in my experience. So makes a ton of sense for sure. What I also saw on your site is like a ton of positive Clutch reviews, which I'm very jealous of. Like we haven't made that a priority, but that's obviously very helpful, I believe, when you're doing sales. And also, I don't know how much leads you're getting from there, but is this something you actively go after, or is it just organically? Like, because I mean, there are, I think, believe like you can offer people a discount, whatever, for a review, different things you can do proactively. Is this like something you do, or?
Yeah, I think it has to be proactive to do it right. We've definitely focused on it. Now, I wouldn't say we focus on it all the time for every project, but definitely for a period of time, we were very focused on it, and we still are. I think it's all part of our process of like client success. So throughout the course of the project, we want to be in close communication with the client, make sure everything is going well. make sure that there's no reason, you know, no issues, and that they're still happy with us and would recommend us, you know, to their peers. So that's really important to us. And then I think a natural kind of byproduct of that is that when the initial project is close to wrapping up, you know, we'll typically do a check-in with the client and again, see how things are going. And then, you know, ask if they'd be willing to leave a review. And Clutch is usually the one that comes up first for our industry, at least. So we'll ask them to do a Clutch review. It's pretty in depth. I mean, it's a kind of a big ask. I don't know if you've done them, but Clutch, you know, will reach out personally, and it takes some time, I think, for them to do. So we certainly appreciate it, but it's important to us. And then from there, we don't want to ask too much, there's always kind of like a balance here, but we may ask for additional reviews on different sites and things like that.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So one last thing I'm very curious about, because like it is a hot topic and you're developers. So are you using any AI at your agency? Did you build anything internally to give an example, like something we've experimented with is really having AI as a kind of project manager, checking different metrics and then creating a briefing for me to really see where we are with different clients, which is going like it's working surprisingly well. Like you can definitely do cool stuff already with the existing tools. And is there anything you have experimented with or too busy with client work so far?
We've done a ton of work with AI. So for our clients, we have a number of large AI projects that we're working on now. None of them are public or released yet, obviously, just because it's so new. But probably midway through last year, we were seeing a lot of activity, you know, most of the activity starting where people would ask us to build certain products or is this possible with AI? And so we're starting to build a few of those across industries like insurance and fintech and healthcare. So there's a couple of AI projects in the works right now. And we expect there to be more of those. And then internally, we, for our own teams, you know, the development team has kind of their, I'll say development and design are certainly using all of the AI tools, things like GitHub, Copilot, and similar tools to that to speed up development. From what I've heard, I don't write much code anymore, but I've heard it's really, you know, the most helpful in terms of like testing and writing test cases. So that's really great to hear. I don't think we probably have some room to keep, you know, utilize it even better on that side, but we're working on that. And then on more of the business and sales and marketing side, we're using it a ton just for things like you mentioned, like I'll get off a call and have a transcript and, you know, run it through ChatGPT to get a summary of what the key features that we're talking about are or what the key client needs are. So things like that, I think we're using it on a daily basis. Yeah.
Yeah. We are using Fireflies, if you've heard of that. It joins like your call, right? And then just follows you around and then you get like the full summary with action items and stuff. It's pretty cool. It's pretty neat. We also then just, when we have a company meeting, just post this in Slack. It's definitely a useful thing. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for taking the time and doing this.
Yeah, thank you, Jacob. Thanks for having me.
Talk soon, Scott. Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.